Mental illness is a silent killer. It has a ripple effect where we know that people who have mental illness have a higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease and metabolic disease than do the general population. We also know that it causes debilitating social problems, with 20% or more of people experiencing homelessness when they suffer from a mental health condition. Mental health conditions are also the only disease that we criminalize, where people who are suffering from mental health breaks may land in jail instead of in proper mental health care facilities. Depression and anxiety alone have swelled to a global economy of more than $1 trillion a year. The average person waits over a decade before their symptoms are appropriately diagnosed and treatment is initiated. And even then, only 45% of adults with mental illness get treatment. Unfortunately, many of the treatments also cause additional problems with cardiovascular disease and metabolic disease, and so the cycle perpetuates itself. My guest today is Sheila Walsh. She is the author of Holding On When You Want to Let Go. And we take a deep dive into how spirituality can help people who are suffering from mental health disorders and depression, and how we can stop living life on a thread and find hope again. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show. A podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Sheila Walsh grew up in Scotland and has spoken to over 6 million women around the world. Her passion is being a Bible teacher, making God's word practical, and sharing her own stories of how God met her when she was at her lowest point and lifted her up again. Sheila loves writing and has sold more than 5 million books. She is also the co-host of the television program Life Today, airing in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Australia, with more than 100 million viewers daily. Calling Texas home, Sheila lives in Dallas with her husband Barry, her son Christian, and their two little dogs, Tink and Maggie, who rule the roost. Sheila Walsh, welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show.
It's good to be with you, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
The topic we're going to talk about today of depression has been requested by our audience over and over again. And I think it's because it affects so many people. It's estimated that 1 in 4 adults over the age of 18 has some sort of mental health disorders. Depression and anxiety are a $1 trillion industry. And the worst part, in my opinion, is that so many people suffer in silence for an average of 11 years before they get an appropriate diagnosis. And as a pharmacist, I also look at the medications that treat depression, and they're hit or miss. They may work great. They may not work at all. They may not change your body weight at all. You may put on 30 pounds. Like, there's really no great way to decide this is the most appropriate treatment for this person. So start us out and just talk to us about why you think that mental health and depression is a critically important topic now.
I think it was for a long time, Lindsay. I think it's been a critically important topic for years, but I think somehow the whole pandemic has exacerbated that. So people are now alone. They're dealing with loneliness and anxiety, wondering what the future is going to hold. And I think that things that perhaps had been bubbling under the surface, it was kind of like a volcanic explosion. Once we got in halfway through 2020, things just seem to go from bad to worse. And I know that because I was diagnosed back in 1992 and spent a month in a hospital diagnosed with severe clinical depression. But I had been maintaining pretty well until maybe 3 months into the pandemic. And then I found myself spiraling again. And honestly, it was kind of a shock to find myself back in that place.
And so tell us a little bit about your experience with clinical depression and what you initially saw as the problems with the way that people are approaching the treatment of depression.
I really was not very aware of how people were approaching the treatment of depression. You know, I worked in a TV show, and if you just were flipping through channels, it looked like everything was great. Like I had my act together, but there was this kind of distant rumble in my soul that had been going on for years. And I can track it back to my earlier childhood. My father had a severe brain aneurysm that impacted his personality. And he went from being a very loving, caring father to a angry and ultimately violent stranger. And when he was taken out of our home, he was 34 years old, and he managed to escape from the psychiatric unit where he was being held, and he drowned himself in the river. And I think because of the Scottish culture that I come from, we just didn't talk about it. My dad was buried in an unmarked grave because there was so much shame attached to A, somebody struggling and having to end up in a psychiatric hospital, and B, committing suicide. Back in Scotland in those days, that was just, it was as if you were wearing a scarlet letter. And so we left town, we went back to where my mother was born, and we never talked about it again. And so through all my growing up years, because my father had attempted to kill me before he killed himself, and not my brother or sister, I grew up with this gigantic question inside of myself: what is wrong with me? What can everybody else see that I'm not seeing, but nobody wants to talk to me about it? And I think just that trying to suppress all those feelings for so many years, eventually it just boiled over. And I ended up in exactly the same place as my father at exactly the same age.
The story just gives me chills because we know just how powerful adverse childhood experiences are in long-term mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, all of the things. Adverse childhood experiences we carry with us. And you said it so beautifully that it was a distant rumble in your soul, something that had just been compartmentalized and put in this little box and never opened the box. And so that is, thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate that you're so honest that this has creeped back in with you in the past few months, because mental health is not something that just like poof gets fixed. You know, we all struggle with sadness, and unfortunately way too many people struggle with sadness that devolves into deep depression. What do you do when that sadness, the pain, the what you expressed is like, what is wrong with me? The am I enough? Why am I unlovable? When that pain and when that sadness creeps in and you find yourself struggling, what do you do to implement daily coping strategies?
First of all, I try to turn down the noise of our world. We live in such a noisy world, whether it's television, social media, so many things are clamoring for our attention. And when I wake up and I'm having a bad day, I'll get my dogs and I'll go for a walk. There's something about being outside, being in fresh air, quietness and stillness of simply being kind to myself. Because the temptation is always to try and muffle the noise, but I think you have to kind of remove yourself from the noise sometimes, because there's so much on social media and television that is desperately depressing. I mean, it just adds to the weight. I mean, I remember one day watching our local television channel, and they were showing a story of a couple who'd been married for 30 years. And he had COVID. He was very, very, very sick. And she couldn't go in and be with her husband. And they would just show these photographs of her standing outside his window, holding up these messages. And it was just heartbreaking. And I think when you surround yourself with that all the time, I mean, we need to be aware of the world we're living in. But when that becomes what you're mostly taking in, then what it's going to produce inside is turmoil and despair and a genuine angst of what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I heard a beautiful quote on another podcast that I just happened to be listening to. It's called That Sounds Fun by Annie Downs. And one of her guests said, your soul is village sized. And he said, look, up until about 100, 150 years ago, human beings moved an average of 3 miles a day. That was as big as our world was. Our soul is built to care for the people within that radius. We don't have that capacity to take all of it in. So talk to us about, what do you do? What are your like actual things that you sit down and do to turn down the noise of the world?
Okay, one thing is I have two, I call them safe sisters. We know where the bodies are buried. I mean, we literally are those, we know each other very, very, very well. And when I'm not doing well, even sometimes when I can't, I don't even want to call and have a conversation, I'll text them. And they'll get back to me and they'll text me things and they'll remind me of things that are good and things that are true. I think the thing about, you talked about how scattered we are around the world. I mean, I was born on the west coast of Scotland. None of my family live here. I live in Dallas, Texas now. My husband was born in Charleston, South Carolina. He has no family here. They're all away in South Carolina. And really, that's how we used to diffuse what was going on inside. We would sit around the dinner table and we would talk about it. And someone would say something, some would say something else, someone would make us laugh. And there was that sense of belonging. But I think so many people feel anchorless in this world, as if they've just been set free and somebody has pushed their little boat out into the middle of nowhere and they're not quite sure what to do.
Mm-hmm. So you're safe sisters. So these are women that you've crafted mutually beneficial and supportive relationships with. Too many women fall into really toxic relationships with their friends. So how have you and your friends grown together, supported each other, and kept each other in check as you need your friends to do sometimes?
Yeah. And honestly, we're very, very different. We ended up meeting at some kind of meeting I've been invited to in Washington that I didn't really want to go to, but for some reason I felt I should go. And I asked the three other women who were going to be there, do you mind if we breakfast before we go into this big meeting? And we sat down, and even though we were so different, one's a really hotshot young attorney who fights for children in foster care. One works with people who are starving in certain parts of Africa. I mean, we're just all very different. One is walking through a very extreme cancer battle at the moment, but we discovered similarities. We discovered that the things that we valued were very similar and that we valued loyalty. And it's been really wonderful watching even just the three of us walking our friend through this cancer battle and talking every day and sending her funny things and then sending her things that your life matters, you know, keep taking the next step, keep taking the next breath. It's like finding your tribe, finding those who build you up rather than tear you down. And sometimes if we'll have a regularly scheduled Zoom thing, and if I'm having a bad day, I don't want to do it. And they will literally get on the phone and say, get your butt on this call right now. And I'll be like, can I do it tomorrow? No, you can't do it tomorrow. We're doing it right now. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you what that's like. It's like walking into the bar. It's like Cheers, you know, where everybody knows your name and they would miss if you weren't there.
Mm-hmm. I know. And as you said, people are anchorless. We've lost that sense of belonging. And I know that to be very, very true for my life and a lot of people who I love's life. If you don't have that groundedness, but it goes back to where we started our entire conversation. It's because we're all over the place instead of centered and grounded. I'm so sorry to hear about your friend's cancer battle. But even before you said that, I was thinking about this misconception that we have in health, that things get cured and things are fixed and things get like healed, especially when it comes to mental health, because mental health disorders are fluctuating. They are relapsing and remitting. And so you can do everything you can to be healed. And I firmly believe everything heals. I believe that God did not intend for us to be on earth being sick. I think that we have the capacity to heal and transform and grow. But talk to us about, how do you respond when people say, so you're fixed, you're healed, you did it, pat yourself on the back?
Yeah, and honestly, I get that question a lot. After I came out of the hospital, not many weeks after, people said, how long did it take them to fix you? And I didn't, for me, it's like scars are proof that God heals. They're not open wounds anymore, but we're still left with the marks. And there's something about that. And I think that scars tell us that we belong to one another. You know, there's a severe mercy about being admitted to a psych hospital. After I'd been there, I mean, the first week was a nightmare for me, but after I'd been there maybe 3 weeks, I was going down to the nurse's station to get my hair dryer out of the sharps box, which you can't keep it in your room. And I noticed a couple of women were checking their mother in. She looked to be maybe in her 70s, and she was crying and they were crying. And so I started to back up to give them a moment of privacy. And one of the women looked up and saw me, and she said, Mom, turn around. You're not going to believe this. And the mother turned around. And when she saw me, I've never met this woman in my life, she ran and threw her arms around me. And the backstory was that this mom used to watch me every, I used to be on a daily talk show, and this mom used to watch me every morning. And the two daughters laughed that I was the third daughter. And when they were, this woman had been abused by her husband for years, and had broken her down to the place that finally she was being admitted for help. But in the parking lot, the daughters prayed a simple prayer. God, will you give my mother a sign that she's in a safe place when she walks through those doors? And she walks through those doors, and there's daughter number three. You know, I just think there's a companionship of brokenness that I've experienced through mental illness that has been a gift to me.
It's that simple life lesson of be grateful for everything. Just be grateful for everything. What an absolutely beautiful story. You're an exceptional storyteller. And you recently wrote your stories down in a book called Holding On When You Want to Let Go. Tell us what the book is about and why you decided to write it now.
Well, I'd actually started another book. I was like 3 or 4 chapters into it. I wanted to write a book on miracles. I wanted to know, what is a miracle? Do we miss miracles? Do we call some things miracles and they're not? But after I started to spiral again, I read what I'd written up until that point, and I thought, this is not helping me at all. And if it's not helping me, there's a really good chance it's not going to help anybody else. So I did that thing that all authors dread. I hit the delete button. And I just sat there with a blank screen. Yes, exactly.
Yes, it's awful. Like when you've written like 10,000 words and you're like, it's not going to work. Just start from scratch. Yep, I know it.
And I thought, you know what? I remember years ago being able to walk with some friends who'd never heard of people struggling with mental illness and helping them understand. I think there's a genuine ignorance about what mental illness is. And once you mix in spirituality, it gets more confusing. Because a lot of people think, well, if you have faith in God, then surely you can just get over this, which is a cruel interpretation to those who are suffering. So I began to write this book, and starting it very honestly, that this has come out of one more maelstrom in my own life where I feel like the storm is so thick, I can't see through it. But believing that I've navigated through it before and that it is possible, I think it's like life is like a circle. You keep coming back to the same place, but understanding it a little bit more and being more prepared for the battle ahead.
I agree. There is a genuine ignorance about mental illness. And I think part of the genuine ignorance is that it's a choice that you like choose these things, and you're just like, buck up. Get over it. And it's like, no, no, guys, there are genuine deficiencies in amino acids, in neurotransmitters, in care that was given on a very evolutionary level as a small child. There's a lot that goes into it. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Most skincare that is out there on the market is packed with lab-made ingredients that do damage to the internal structures of the skin and don't address the main reasons that skin looks old. What we need is skincare that actually addresses the five pillars that help our skin to look healthy, bounce back, and have a vibrant complexion. We need our skin to stay hydrated, have good blood flow, good collagen, good elastin, and to maintain our facial muscle tone. Primal Life Organics has a glow package that is specifically designed to address all five of these pillars. The products are super easy to use, and there are certain products to use in the morning and in the evening. Get up in the morning and wash your face with luxurious saponified oils in the Earth Facial Cleanser. Then apply the coffee bean serum to give your skin a quick jolt of caffeine, making it look alive and vibrant. In the evening, wash your face again with the Earth Cleanser. Then exfoliate all of the day away using the Sweet Revenge Exfoliator. And then give your skin a big dose of antioxidants to absorb throughout the night with the Blueberry Elixir. This way, we will maintain our skin's inner structures now and into the future, and ensure that as our skin goes through the natural journey of aging, that we preserve, maintain, and build hydration, circulation, muscle tone, collagen, and elastin. Head to lindsayelmore.com/primallife to shop the Glow Package today. That's lindsayelmore.com/primallife to try out my new favorite skincare. And now, let's get back to the show. So, what are, I think also about silencing the noise in our heads. We also have to just stop talking down to ourselves and just, I am interested, you know, you say that there are lies that we tell ourselves. What are some of the most common lies that you think we tell ourselves, and how do we stop?
You know, it's interesting. I have this vivid memory of when I'm 16 years old and I've been given the lead role of Maria in the high school play West Side Story. And for the dress rehearsal, all the high school students were invited. And I'm halfway through singing I Feel Pretty when one of the senior boys calls out really loudly, "Well, you don't look it." And the whole high school burst out laughing. And as far as I was frozen to the spot, because it was just a public acknowledgement of what I already believed about myself. I mean, if you had dug down to the foundation stone of my life, it would have been, there's something wrong with me. And now he had said it in public and everybody laughed. And I think for years, it's taken me years to be able to peel back those layers of things I've always believed. Because when things happen in childhood, children are the best recorders of information, but they're the poorest interpreters of that information. Children always think it's something they did or something they could have done. The very fact that my father never attacked my sister and my brother made me feel they're okay. And everybody knows that, but everybody in the family, and nobody wants to say it, but everybody knows there's something really wrong with me. And so I began to journal when I was in the hospital. I began to just write out. In fact, I did some of it with my left hand because I'm not very good with my left hand, but somehow what comes out tends to be a little more true or a little less accessible with your right hand. And I discovered all those things that I've thought that I'm not worthy, I'll never be loved. I don't deserve to be happy. I just have to get through this life. All these things are kind of survival memos as opposed to thriving truths. And that's what I've had to do. I call it re-wallpapering my mind. You know, I remember how hard it was for my mom when she wanted to re-wallpaper a room in our house. The hardest thing was getting all the old wallpaper off, because it just is on there like it's clinging on until, you know, the apocalypse. But you can't put the fresh wallpaper on until the old wallpaper is gone. And so it's a daily discipline for me that when I feel some of those old lies or old things I've believed about myself, just scraping them off and replacing them with truth. You don't want to leave the walls bare, but because sometimes the old stuff will just cling back up there, but replacing with things like, you know, I am worthy. I am loved. I do have a future. There is hope. I get to be with other people. You know, I deserve to be loved. I am a good mom. I am a good wife, as opposed to all the things of, like, I had a little instance just, I don't know, 4 weeks ago. My husband and I were on a Zoom call with our son, who's 24. He's in graduate school studying clinical psychology. And he had a ball cap on that night on our conversation. And my husband said to him, babe, you really shouldn't wear a ball cap on these conversations, you know, because if you're doing Zoom classes, you want to look professional. And my son was like, Dad, it's really not like that, you know, and anyway, I don't want to be that kind of counselor. I want to be real. I want to be accessible. And they were going on, and it was no big deal until I jumped in, because it triggered something in me. Somehow my husband's message to my son about this is not enough, you're not good enough, came back on me. And I kind of lost it. And I went off on my husband. And my son kind of politely said, hey, got some homework to do, hung up.
I'm out. Please let me out of this conversation right now.
And my husband said, do you want to talk? And I'm like, no. And he went upstairs. And I thought, gosh, even at this stage and age in my life, some little, because I've discovered when my response is out of proportion to what's happening, there's history attached. There's always history attached. And so being able to recognize that, and then having mercy on myself, forgiving myself, and then asking my husband and my son to forgive me. And honestly, those little moments in our family have deepened all of our relationships, because we get it that we're all broken. We all mess up, but that we get to forgive one another and forgive ourselves.
Mm-hmm. This brings up several things for me. One is the lies we tell ourselves. I think Sheryl Sandberg really summed it up well. The three most common lies that hold us back from getting where we want to go are: everything is awful, it will always be awful, and it's my fault it's awful. And Tanya Dalton also says, you know, the sources of fear that we have are that I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable. And it's like, yes, we all feel that way. We all have this brokenness. The other thing that you said so beautifully is your husband's behavior triggered you. And you have come to that point, you know, life's that circle. We keep coming back to the same point, but we understand it differently. You understand that that trigger is yours to deal with. Your husband is just saying like, hey, son, show up, look like a boss on the screen. When people identify that this is triggering for me, how do you ease into it? You mentioned forgiveness. We talked with David Sandstrom about the critical nature of forgiveness. So when you realize, okay, I have been triggered, how do you get to what's beneath that? How do you keep exploring that dark space?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you understood, my family took to the winds. You know, they were clearly in, we don't need to be right here, right now, which was good. And it left me to myself. And I found myself kind of on my knees. I mean, I actually ended up in tears because I thought, good grief. I mean, surely I've learned this by now. But honestly, I invite God into these conversations because I'm like, you know, what is there in me that's still so broken that feels like anything like that is actually reflecting on me? And when I thought about it later, I thought, well, what could I have done? like in the middle of the conversation when that's happening, I could have said, hey guys, you know what? I don't know what it is about this, but some of the thing of it just make me feel a little uncomfortable. So I'm gonna love you and just head off for a little bit. I could have gone somewhere. I could have taken a walk. I could have walked outside and thought, okay, what is this attached to? Instead of firing off, you know, it's like when you have old stuff and then you just throw a match in and it's just like, it just blows up. So even at this age in my life, I'm learning to learn quicker about what is going on and not to blame other people for the things that I still have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have to remind myself on the regular, I feel this way. This other person is not making me feel this way. I feel this way. So walk away. What is that? What is that attached to? And just learning to learn quicker. That learning to learn quicker is so, so important. And what lessons have you learned about giving other people grace when they actually can like show up for themselves and go, something here is making me irrationally uncomfortable. Give me a minute. Because I have been told that oftentimes when people give me that sign, I press harder. It's like, but no, let's talk about it. So what have you learned about grace and acceptance that allows people to actually move through this deep emotional work?
I had an interesting conversation with a woman. I was speaking a few months ago in Chicago. And after I got off the platform, I was hanging around at the back, just talking to anyone who wanted to talk. And this one woman came up to me and she said, you said something on the platform tonight that is absolutely not true. And I said, what is that? And she said, you believe that God is powerful and that God is loving. So you're going to have to pick one because they cannot both be true. And so I said to her, why don't you and I go for a walk? Because it was in a hall, it was busy. So we walked outside and we walked for a while until I found a bench. We sat down and I looked at her and I said, what happened to you? And she told me that she buried two sons. And she said, I've buried two boys. So you're going to have to pick. Either God is powerful, then he's not loving because I've buried two boys. Or he's loving, but he's not powerful enough to have stopped it. And I just thought, there's times when I try to see behind the anger. Years ago, if somebody got angry with me, I became very defensive. But now I think there's usually a reason behind someone's angry outburst. And sometimes if you just give them space to come down just a few notches and then sit and then maybe just invite them to, you know, is there anything? Can I help you with anything? What's going on here? And I mean, we ended up in a place where we literally just sat for a while in silence together. I just held her hand and we both cried for the fact that there's things in life that makes no sense at all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the greatest gift we can give one another is the gift of our presence, not our words.
Mm-hmm. I know. When you have a big social media following, sometimes you post things that people don't like, and sometimes it's because they get triggered by it. And so I've been receiving some negative feedback about like, you shouldn't be sharing these things. And I'm like, no, there's a critically important reason that I am sharing these things. So let's talk about it. And I think in this era where there's so much contention, and I just finished listening to a podcast that just like hurt my brain and my heart, that there are people who make a living outright lying to us and crafting narratives on TV all of the time. And so I think when we have those moments, it is the important step of like, let's just ask questions. Let's find out, because we're all broken and we all want to belong, you know? And so if you have made somebody feel like they don't belong, talk to them, because my experience is you have way more in common with that person than you ever would have imagined. Has it ever gone wrong for you? You know, have you ever had those moments where you've not handled it well?
Yeah, I was speaking somewhere, and I was speaking three times, and I'd spoken twice, and I was about to go up to speak for the third time. And this woman came up to me and she said, I think what you're sharing is really unhelpful. And I said, why is that? And she said, well, you know, you're supposed to be up there building up people's faith, and you're just talking about your brokenness. And I think that's disgraceful. And I tried back and forth for two or three times. And we were getting absolutely nowhere, because she was determined that I was doing damage. And I was pretty sure that I was doing what I was supposed to do. And I said to her, would you be willing to come and sit in for the third session? And she said, no, you're not hearing me, and I'm gone. And she walked out. And it's one of those things where part of me felt like, wow, what can I do? And part of me thought, I need to let her walk away, because we cannot make everybody, we want to resolve everything. And honestly, in this world, that is not possible. Now, she knew I would be there till 7 o'clock that night if she wanted to come back. But she walked away, and I had to let her. And that kind of grieves me, because I'm not afraid of anything you might say to me, but could we just sit down and talk together? You know, I want to hear you if you would hear me, because sometimes that's not possible, and you mm-hmm. have to let it go.
Well, you can't force other people to go through the pain of change. You can't force other people to go through the growth processes. Now, I'd like to shift gears a little bit now, and just sometimes mental health disorders get really, really bad, and they do grave damage to families. I'd love for you to speak to both the person suffering from mental health disorders, as well as the friends and family and loved ones of people who know people with depression, with schizophrenia, with bipolar disorder, where there is that like desperate desire to want to help, and yet that need to sometimes release and let go. So what do you recommend for people who just feel like they're at the end of their rope?
I think what people don't understand is that mental illness impacts everyone in the family. It's not just the one person who is suffering themselves, but it's those around. I mean, for the first, probably 5 or 6 years of our marriage, my husband was determined to fix me, and he couldn't understand. I mean, he would say sometimes if I was having a dark day, he would say, but everything's going well. You know, this is going well and that's going well. It was very hard for him to understand that what was happening internally was nothing to do with what was happening externally in my life. It was just like a storm that had blown up. And one of the things he has learned is to just give me space, because we've had to learn that with our son too. My son struggles with depression, anxiety, and OCD. And that's a complicated diagnosis. And I think the greatest thing that we do in our family dynamic is to give one another space and not to try to fix each other. I think there's just something, and perhaps it's more of a male personality trait that they want to fix everything in the family. But if you have a family member who is struggling, I think sometimes the greatest thing you can do is just accept them as they are at that moment and let them know this is not your fault. Because so often there's a lot of shame attached to mental illness. And I think shame is different than guilt. Guilt might tell me I've done something wrong, but shame tells me I am something wrong. And that's such a heavy overcoat to wear that I think just to give as many loving and supportive messages we can, that I don't understand everything, but I'm here for you. I love you. Let me know if there's anything I can do. It's a complicated scenario.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very complicated because you often just don't know what to do. You often don't know what to do. I know so many families of people who are addicts, and that line is just extraordinarily complicated to toe of like, when do I push? When do I accept? When do I walk away? It's a Sophie's choice in a long way. Now, I really want to dig deep in our last few minutes here about the role of spirituality in our ability to overcome mental health disorders and depression. Talk to us kind of more about, you know, when did you come to God? When did you have that moment where you were like, because I'm sure you've taken meds. I'm sure you've tried psychotherapy. I am sure that you have tried lots of different modalities. But when did you decide it's my spiritual health that's at risk right now? And here is how I have to fix my spiritual health, because I firmly believe it is as important as physical and mental health. And spiritual health is critical.
Yeah, it's interesting because my first encounter with God was very meaningful, but I picked up the wrong message. I was 11 years old and my mother took me to hear Scotland's only gospel group, and they were just awful. But
being from Alabama, I'm like, we will send you some good gospel singers. I promise you they will be on a plane over. Yes. Okay. So Scottish gospel singers. All right. I love it.
Yeah. But that night we talked about having a relationship with God. But one of the things that was said, and you'll know this, we tend to hear things through the broken windows of our own experience. I was told that, you know, you can have a relationship with God and he will be your heavenly father. Now, that would be great news for 90% of the population, perhaps.
Not for you.
Me, yeah, not for me. No, for me, what I heard was, if your earthly father, who once seemed to love you, now apparently hated you so much he wished you were dead, then it's very possible that could happen with God too. So I determined I had to become the perfect Christian woman. So I went to seminary to train to be
good
a missionary.
Luck. Good luck. I wish you well on this journey. Okay, so you go to seminary.
Yep, to train to be a missionary in India, end up going somewhere else and end up coming over to America and trying again. I mean, I'm out every weekend. I'm speaking 5 days a week. I'm on this Christian talk show. But inside, I'm still the same scared five-year-old little girl who will not let anybody get close to her in case you see what my father saw. And so, I mean, I'd had that wall up for years. And then one morning, a guest, instead of answering my question, asks me a question. And all she said was, "Sheila, how are you doing?" And I wasn't expecting it. And I didn't have time to pull up my wall. And I started to cry and I couldn't stop. And by that evening, I was in the locked ward of a psychiatric hospital. And I remember thinking I'd literally gone to hell. It was like, if you've based any relationship, any spirituality on you getting everything right, and you end up in a place that says everything's kind of gone wrong. But it was one of God's greatest gifts to me, because I remember the first night laying on the floor of that little hospital room that had no locks on the doors. And all the big prayers I'd prayed through the years, they were gone. And the only two words that I could squeeze out were, "Help me." Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, I felt closer to God on the floor of a psychiatric hospital than I'd ever felt any place up until then in my life. Yeah. It was amazing.
Oh, such a beautiful, beautiful story. Whenever friends ask me, like, what do I do to let this go? Or what do I do to enhance my ability to care for myself? What do I do? And it's like, you know, all the bad behaviors, you're just trying to fill a need that only God can fill. And all of the times that you're feeling fear and that you're feeling this and that, just find a way. I don't know how to say it better, but find a way to give it away. Just find a way to give it away. And the acknowledgement of the fact that we are all broken, I think, gives us all courage. Because if we all feel fear and we all feel anger and we all feel sad and we all feel lonely, if we all feel this way. So let's just acknowledge that and support each other through the rapid fluctuations of ups and downs of what it means to be a human being. So tell us where people can pick up a copy of your book. It's called Holding On, When You Want to Let Go. And when I was reading a little bit about the book, it and now after talking to you, I think it really will offer this lifeline of hope that people can use to overcome momentary troubles, no matter how crazy that they feel. It's not always going to be terrible. And you do it by offering people spiritual healing on their path and journey. So thank you for all that you do. Where can people get a copy of your book?
It's wherever you buy books, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. But you can connect with me on my Facebook page, Sheila Walsh Connects, and I'll often just hop on there and we'll just talk. We'll just talk about life.
Oh, sounds like an amazing, amazing group to be in. Everyone, go pick up a copy of Holding On When You Want to Let Go. It is out with Baker Books, and it is available everywhere that you can purchase books. Sheila Walsh, thank you so much for coming in and showing us the extraordinary, extraordinary power of vulnerability today.
Thank you, Lindsay, so much.
The time is finally here. Wellness Made Simple is live. This is a project that I have been working on in the background for many, many months. It has been a labor of love. That is an online subscription learning platform that will teach you practical skills that you need to build a healthy lifestyle. If you're someone who wants to live healthy, but you're done, you're so just over diets and exercise, if you don't know where to do good research, or if you don't know what wellness options are actually going to serve you, you may be the perfect person to come and learn at wellnessmadesimple.us. Flexible courses you can watch anytime that span so many subjects, like natural remedies for ADHD. How do you overcome PTSD? How can you meditate every day for 10 days to reduce your stress? There's a 7-day metabolism makeover crash course. Right now, there are more than 85 videos, more than 12 hours of education available, and new content is added regularly. We love hearing from our subscribers about what is the education that you need. So head to wellnessmadesimple.us, get access, watch the courses, and feel better as you implement daily changes that positively transform your health. For now, and only through the end of the year, you can lock in early bird pricing for life. That is half off an annual subscription for the life of your membership when you shop with the code EARLYBIRD. So instead of paying $499 a year, you will be paying $249 a year. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Get early bird pricing now through the end of the year only at wellnessmadesimple.us. It's your one-stop shop to build practical skills for your healthy lifestyle. Head to wellnessmadesimple.us and shop with the code EARLYBIRD to get half off for life. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.